The land was taken. And so when Malcolm finds himself in jail, we find that Malcolm is still smart. He ends up being a star debater on the debate team. The prison debated against Ivy League schools, Harvard, MIT, Boston University, and Malcolm debated about the about capital punishment. And so we see his compassion, we see his wit, we see his ability to inform and engage others. And so, you know, what we find is that Malcolm studied the dictionary not so that he could learn how to read and write, but he studied the dictionary so he could learn the etymology, the root words, so he could be his best. And when we look at today, the criminal justice system, we know that there are over 3 million people behind bars, that the U.S. spent in 2012 $80 billion taxpayer dollars on correction facilities, not education, not after-school programs. And so the incarcerated population has increased by 700%, and we wanted to focus on the humanity of these people behind bars.
And of course, you dedicate the book to the incarcerated. Ilyasa Shahbaz, I want to thank you so much for being with us. The book is called The Awakening of Malcolm X. I'm Amy Goodman. Wear a mask. Stay safe.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM and KBOO.FM online.
Hello, my friends. This is Life During Wartime.
Tune in to KBOO on Wednesday, March 17th at 10 p.m. for Life During Wartime.
Not just a regular Life During Wartime, playing punk and hardcore, having live bands, and letting you know all the underground DIY punk happenings going on in the Portland metro area.
Just because we're different, they have a spaz attack.
This is a celebration marathon. It's from 10 p.m. to 5:30 a.m. It's our 26th year on the air, so we're having a 25th anniversary celebration.
Looking back at the DJs and bands
Life During Wartime
that have made Life During Wartime a punk institution in Portland, at KBOO, and on the World Wide Web.
Celebrate 25 years of Life During Wartime by donating during our anniversary marathon celebration.
On Wednesday, March 17th, from 10 p.m. to 5:30 a.m.
Here on your community radio station.
KBOO Portland.
KBOO is hiring a membership director. Our membership director maintains relationships with KBOO members and listeners, create a process to meet or exceed fundraising goals, and manage the membership database. For a complete job description and instructions on how to apply, visit kboo.fm/employment. Apply by March 15th. KBOO is an affirmative action and equal opportunity employer.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, for the fourth time in 3 years, Republicans walked out of the Oregon Senate yesterday, bringing a halt to all activity. Employees and community members showed their support for workers at the Amazon Distribution Center in Troutdale on Saturday, and the Oregon Senate Judiciary Committee has proposed a bill to allow restrictions on handguns in public buildings. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Friday, February 26th, 2021. I'm Nat Moon. Yesterday, the Oregon Senate Judiciary Committee approved a bill that could ban handguns in public buildings. Under current law, Oregonians with a concealed handgun license are permitted to carry the weapon in public spaces. But if passed, the measure would allow any city, county, commercial airport, school district, college, or university to limit or prohibit concealed handgun licensees from bringing their weapons into a public building. The bill was unanimously supported by committee Democrats, despite the objections of Republicans and many gun owners. In a virtual public hearing on Monday, Portland Democratic Senator Ginny Burdick referenced a January 27th bulletin from the Department of Homeland Security, warning of possible targeting of elected officials by extremists. She expressed concern that 300,000 Oregonians have concealed weapon permits and open access to public buildings, saying, quote, "As a person who works in the Capitol and has watched the armed protests at our Capitol and around the country, the protections offered by Senate Bill 554 cannot come soon enough." On the Republican side, Minority Leader Fred Girod testified that he would feel defenseless without a gun, saying, quote, "I'll be darned if I'm going to be a sitting duck for someone that comes in here and wants to start shooting. That's just not right." But Burdick countered that, quote, "School districts are powerless to keep parents from bringing guns to parent-teacher conferences or to sporting events. City councils and county commissions cannot keep audience members from bringing firearms to a contentious debate." Over 2,000 pieces of written testimony were received both for and against the proposed bill. The Judiciary Committee recommended that the bill be passed by the full Senate. If it passes there, it would go to the House. For the fourth time in the last 3 years, Republicans in the Oregon State Senate have walked out. This time, they've decided that they are not happy with the state's handling of the coronavirus pandemic. The walkout by all Republicans left 18 senators, two short of the number required for quorum. According to Senate Minority Leader Fred Girod, the legislature has, quote, "abdicated too much responsibility to Democratic Governor Kate Brown." The Willamette Valley Republican wants the legislature to have a greater say in vaccine distribution and demanded that Brown force the teachers' union to send teachers back to school immediately. Girod insisted that evidence suggests that teachers don't need to be vaccinated to reopen schools. But the governor has prioritized vaccines for teachers ahead of seniors older than 65 in an effort to safely reopen schools. The CDC has prioritized teachers as, quote, "frontline essential workers," but has not gone so far as to call vaccinations for teachers and staff a requirement for schools to open. Senate Majority Leader Rob Wagner vilified the walkout, saying, quote, "Lives are at stake as we deal with the COVID-19 pandemic, and yet the Senate Republicans continue their anti-democratic walkout tactics." Failure to attend legislative sessions has become a frequent tactic of Oregon Republicans in the last few years. Last year's session ground to a halt when the GOP members walked out to prevent the passage of a climate change measure. In 2019, they walked out twice, once over a different climate bill and a second time on education tax funding. Senate President Peter Courtney said that going forward, the Senate will meet twice a week in a continuing effort to advance bills coming out of the committee, but at this point, it's unclear if or when Republicans will show up. On Saturday, employees and community members gathered for a pro-union rally at Amazon's distribution center in Troutdale. KBOO's Ethan Sandweiss was there and has this report.
Workers of the world unite! Struggle! Stay fire! Workers of the world unite! Despite the company's success, some workers at Amazon warehouses describe their working conditions as inhuman. Protesters gathered at Amazon's Troutdale Distribution Center Saturday to stand in solidarity with organizing workers.
Well, I think it's important for the public to support the working class.
I'm a supporter of the Amazon workers' right to have a union. I am a member, a retired member of the of United Food and Commercial Workers. I was a butcher, and so now I get a retirement, and I wouldn't have that without the union.
I've been a regular worker. I've also worked for the union. I've been involved in organizing campaigns when I was a representative for the union. One of the speaker here said, oh, it'll be game over for Amazon if they get a union contract. You know, that's really not right. Amazon will do just fine as a union employer.
My name is Keith Haxton. Currently work at Amazon, been at the current location I'm at for over 14 months. And could you tell me a little bit about what you're hoping to accomplish here today?
Right now, we're trying to get the word out there that we need to organize. We're trying to get solidarity from the community. We're trying to inspire our coworkers. We have over 10,000, maybe even 15,000 workers at Amazon warehouses just in Oregon. And to get the message out there that, hey, we're organizing, you have friends, we're in solidarity with you, it's a big part of it. Ostensibly, the main reason we are here is to get Brian rehired.
Rehire Brian!
Rehire Brian! Brian was our core organizer. He was working here at PDX9. He got fired 3 days before Christmas, and he needs to get rehired. He didn't deserve it. I think they actually fired him because he submitted a complaint about us not getting 2-week notice for our schedule changes, which according to Oregon law, we need now. And he followed up with Bully, and they said, actually, Amazon's legal justification for not giving us a 2-week notice is they say, we're not a retailer. Amazon claims to not be a retailer. The largest retailer in the world probably says, oh, we're not a retailer. That law doesn't apply to us. They said that to Brian, and then they fired him not long after.
And they just basically said, no, but the main thing you need to know is you can't talk to anybody about this, can't tell anybody about your firing, can't tell any coworkers, can't tell anybody outside of work, and also you're just fired and have no recourse. And you can't appeal this either. HR isn't there to help workers. I figured that out while I was on site because they would constantly lie to me and lie to other workers about conditions, about safety.
I've injured my foot, my back, my shoulder. I've been in physical therapy 2 or 3 times, and I'm pretty young. I'm 32 years old. And it's mostly just that the managers don't care. If you'd say, hey, my back is hurting, I need to take a break. No, you're not getting a break.
People are working 55, 60 hours a week, mandatory, forced overtime. 4.5 months of that last year. COVID especially, where there's not a real way where you can actually do safe distancing. You'd have trainers and managers come into your workstation and stand next to you with their mask hanging off their face and try to give you direction. And it's a scary place where to try to tell somebody above you what you can do or not do because they're constantly firing people for dumb reasons.
Several demonstrators referenced the unionization efforts of Amazon warehouse employees in Bessemer, Alabama. Their effort to join the retail, wholesale, and department store union represents the largest push for Amazon workers' union to date. The company pushed back with mandatory anti-union lectures, posters, and text messages. Some workers were fired, allegedly, for their role as organizers.
There's like 1.3 million people who work in Amazon now. Amazon is massively growing. Almost everyone knows someone who works in Amazon in the United States now, or close to it. I think the big thing that the public can do is A, they can put pressure on Amazon and say, those jobs should be good jobs, and we don't need more gig jobs in a gig economy. They can put pressure on politicians to say, we need more worker protections. But they can also basically say to the workers that they know at Amazon, the way things get better is if you guys form a union. It takes actual collective power to hold those things and keep those for workers.
From KBOO News, I'm Ethan Sandweiss.
Oregon Republicans have elected Senator Dallas Hurd, a far-right state senator, to lead their party going forward. Hurd has fought against coronavirus restrictions and vocally supported the protesters who stormed the Oregon State Capitol on January 6th. At that rally, the Roseburg Republicans shouted, quote, "Don't let any of these punks from that stone temple over there ever tell you that they are any better than you. Trust me, I work with these fools." In response, Democratic House Speaker Tina Kotek said, quote, "If you hold us in such low regard, I'm like, why are you even in office?" In the weeks following the January 6th attack, Hurd and fellow Republican Herman Bartschiger created a group called Citizens Against Tyranny to fight state-mandated safety regulations around COVID-19. The group went so far as to publicly identify 2 senior citizens who had filed OSHA complaints against businesses not following COVID safety guidelines. They were called filthy traitors on the Citizens Against Tyranny website. The continuing shift to the right is seen as further confirmation of the power that former President Donald Trump still exerts within the GOP. In January, the Oregon Republican Party released a letter claiming that the January 6th riot at the U.S. Capitol was a, quote, "false flag operation designed to discredit President Trump and conservative Republicans." But no evidence has ever been uncovered to support that claim. And in the weeks since the riot, U.S. law enforcement agencies have arrested numerous members of the Proud Boys, the Oath Keepers, and other right-wing extremist groups. During her weekly coronavirus press conference, Governor Kate Brown reviewed the recent reduction in the state's case count and provided an update on the state's vaccination rate.
1 year in, with our vaccine efforts continuing to ramp up, we truly see the light at the end of the tunnel. Like every state, we've had some bumps along the way, but overall, we're getting shots into the arms of Oregonians quickly, safely, and equitably. For the past 3 weeks, we've seen our case counts steadily decline. Our hospitalizations have matched that. And last week, we reported the lowest COVID-19 deaths since the summer. Oregon's percentage of positive tests has consistently hovered around the 3% mark. It means the smart choices Oregonians continue to make are helping slow the spread in our communities.
The governor then outlined the vaccine schedule for the next few months and committed to an end date when vaccines would be available to all Oregonians.
No later than June 1st will be general population age 45 years and older, and no later than July 1st, all Oregonians age 16 and over will be eligible for the vaccine. Yes, you're hearing me correctly. Come summer, provided supplies from the federal government continue as planned, any Oregonian who wants the vaccine will be eligible to receive it. And while that gives us all a reason to breathe a sigh of relief, it should also serve as a reminder that the finish line is in sight and we cannot let up.
Although some have pushed back against the governor's tight restrictions, Oregon continues to have one of the lowest COVID-19 infection and death rates in the country. Detailed information on the state's vaccination schedule can be found at covidvaccine.oregon.gov. The COVID vaccines are slowly rolling out, but a surprisingly high percentage of Americans are saying that they'll refuse to get it. KBOO's Ray Bodwell has a question for those people.
I am fed up with people who refute the value of vaccines. Born in 1952, I'm old enough to remember life before many of today's vaccines were available. There was the summer where I wasn't allowed out of my backyard because of the polio epidemic. And a couple years later, my sister had the measles so badly she was hallucinating while my parents desperately worked to bring her fever down. So yeah, I'm a believer in vaccines. And I think that any parent who consciously decides not to have their child immunized against preventable childhood diseases is a fool. I'm especially fed up with adults who are refusing to get the COVID vaccine when it's available. In some cases, they think that COVID-19 is a hoax or no worse than a mild flu. They should have that conversation with the grieving friends or relatives of the more than 500,000 Americans who have died from it so far. Then there are those who say they don't want to inject a foreign substance into their body or are convinced that if they get it, it's no big deal and they'll probably survive. You could be asymptomatic or really ill or even end up in intensive care, but the odds are that you probably won't die. But your inability to consider the potential downstream impact seems pretty selfish to me. You may not die, but if you pass it on to someone at a higher risk, they might. So let's run a little thought experiment. Let's imagine that instead of the coronavirus, you're bitten by a dog that is confirmed to have rabies. Would you get the rabies vaccine? If you do become infected, there is almost zero likelihood that you'd pass rabies on to someone else. But once you become infected, there is nothing that can be done to save you from an agonizing death. Once the infection sets in, it's too late for the rabies vaccine. In this hypothetical situation, the only person directly affected by this decision is you. So what would you decide? If you would choose to get the rabies vaccine in our little scenario, but still choose not to get the COVID vaccine in the real world we're inhabiting, you've pretty much confirmed your selfishness. Choosing to get the COVID vaccine when it becomes available isn't about politics or your individual freedoms or even your sense of self-reliance. It's about our shared humanity. And unless you're one of the tiny percentage of people who are allergic, your refusal to get the COVID vaccine tells me that you value yourself, but you don't value others. Is that really who you want to be? If so, shame on you. For KBOO, this is Ray Bodwell.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Coming up next at 5:30, it's Counterspin. At 6, it's Rising Up with Sana Lee. Then at 7, The Struggle with Alyssa Pariah. Tonight we can expect some late showers with temperatures in the low 40s, and tomorrow we'll see a mixture of clouds and sun with a high of about 50. On this day in 1998, the Oregon Health Services Commission decided that physician-assisted suicide would be provided without cost to folks who are terminally ill. Today's quote is from attorney Eli Stutzman, lead author of the Death with Dignity Act. He said, quote, "We haven't tried to change the way people die or the way people ask for help. We have attempted to bring something out of the dark and into the light, and at the same time provide safeguards." The acting chief of the U.S. Capitol Police has warned that the militia groups involved in the January 6th riot want to stage another attack when President Biden makes his first joint address to Congress. In testimony given to a House subcommittee, Chief Yogananda Pittman said that threats have been circulating about extremists who want to blow up the Capitol building and kill lawmakers. Pittman made those comments while justifying the exceptionally tight security measures that have been in place around the Capitol since January 7th. In her testimony, the chief said, quote, "We know that members of the militia groups that were present on January 6th have stated their desires that they want to blow up the Capitol and kill as many members as possible." The riot directly led to 5 deaths and left 140 police officers injured and resulted in the erection of a non-scalable 7-foot-tall fence around the Capitol. Since then, investigations have led to the arrest and indictment of members of the Proud Boys, Oath Keepers, and other extremist groups. Although the date for Biden's first address to Congress has not been set yet, law enforcement officials have expressed heightened concern about Thursday, March 4th. That's the date that the conspiracy theory group QAnon has set for Donald Trump to return to Washington to begin his next term as president. Yesterday, the Senate parliamentarian ruled that the $15 minimum wage cannot be included under budget reconciliation. The budget reconciliation process will allow Democrats in Congress to bypass a Republican filibuster and pass the measure with a simple majority. With more on the story and others, it's Mary Sherman with 2021 Talks.
Welcome to 2021 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times. Efforts to include a $15 minimum wage in the COVID relief bill hit a snag yesterday. The Senate parliamentarian ruled the provision is not compliant with budget rules that allow legislation to pass with a simple majority. The Pentagon announced the Biden administration's first known military action, a targeted airstrike in Syria in response to a recent rocket attack that injured a member of the U.S. service. Congressional leaders squabbled over the scope of a commission to investigate the Capitol insurrection. Republicans want to include the, quote, full scope of political violence, unquote, likely including last summer's protests against police brutality. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi wants the focus specifically on domestic terrorism and January 6.
What we need is the truth, and that's what we want to find out. The truth about what is happening in our country to enable something like this to be acceptable to the Republican Party.
Acting Capitol Police Chief Yogananda Pittman told House lawmakers that their extra security protocols were properly aligned to intelligence reports of possible violence, but they didn't expect a mob of that size and makeup to overrun the building.
No credible threat indicated that tens of thousands would attack the U.S. Capitol.
Pittman said emergency procedures were not appropriately followed when officers were overwhelmed. She also disclosed chilling new information that militia groups are even now threatening to blow up the Capitol. The U.S. House has approved the Equality Act, which amends civil rights laws to prohibit discrimination based on sexual orientation and gender identity. The first openly gay man of color in Congress, California Democrat Mark Takano, hailed the passing and dismissed opponents who contend the law gives transgender athletes an unfair advantage in women's sports.
How insidiously ironic is that, that the opponents of this bill are using the people who are victimized the most, who need the protections of this bill the most, as the argument against passing this bill?
President Joe Biden heads to Texas today to talk with local officials about winter storm relief efforts and last week's unprecedented utility failures. Meanwhile, Republican-controlled state houses are considering dozens of election-related bills most would reduce voter turnout. Iowa's governor has yet to sign legislation making it more difficult to vote by mail, and an Arizona bill would let legislators overturn presidential results there. In newly blue Georgia, several bills would also restrict absentee and early voting. Journalist Noah Changa follows electoral justice there. She says one measure to end Sunday voting is a direct attack on Black voters.
Souls to the poll is something that a lot of Black churches and Black communities do. Black people aren't the only ones who vote on Sundays, but we do know that there is a huge, massive organizing effort that happens on Sundays with Souls to the Poll.
Chang adds the efforts to restrict access have already undermined years of get out the vote efforts. And Sunday in Florida, former President Donald Trump headlines the premier conservative gathering, CPAC. For Pacifica Network and Public News Service, I'm Mary Sherman. Thanks for listening.
The South Dakota legislature is supporting an investigation into the killing of more than 300 Native Americans at the Wounded Knee Massacre in 1890. With that story and others, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News, the daily newscast dedicated to Indigenous news, issues, and culture.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The South Dakota State Senate supports a resolution to open an inquiry on the soldiers who were awarded the Medal of Honor for their participation in the genocide of around 300 Native Americans. Richard Tubles reports.
The Wounded Knee Massacre occurred in 1890 after a group of mostly Lakota elders, women, and children led by Chief Bigfoot were seeking refuge on the Pine Ridge Reservation when they were deterred by the U.S. Army's 7th Cavalry near Wounded Knee Creek. They were stripped of their weapons, and after a shot rang out, they were eventually gunned down. 20 U.S. soldiers were awarded the Medal of Honor. Native Americans have opposed this recognition, including Remy Bald Eagle, a U.S. Army combat veteran who served in the Middle East.
For me personally, as a soldier, as a combat veteran, it gives a little bit more legitimacy to my service. It is difficult for any Native American to love this country because of what we've been through. But we love this land, so we stand up for it, and we go to war for it.
Bald Eagle is the spokesperson and enrolled member of the Cheyenne River Sioux Tribe. He says this resolution is the first of many to honor those Native Americans who were massacred that fateful day and to restore the honor of the nation's highest honor of valor.
The United States, you know, the United States prides itself on freedom and being united and liberty and honesty and integrity. And awarding medals of honor for the massacre of women and children and babies is none of that. And I think it's a statement to not just the people of the United States, but the rest of the world that we can step back and say we have wronged and we're going to make steps to right that wrong because we have integrity.
This resolution, according to Bald Eagle, may take decades of persistence for it to ultimately happen, but it's a good first step in creating a path to healing and understanding each other's differences. In Rapid City, I'm Richard Tubles.
A petition drive to keep a Native American-themed mascot for Roseburg High School in Oregon is underway. KLCC's Brian Bull reports.
In recent years, most Oregon public schools ended their Indian mascots unless a local tribe agreed to co-sponsor it, which is what the Cow Creek Band of Umpqua Indians in Roseburg High indicated in 2017. With a 3-year revisitation term up, some Roseburg alumni and families are working to keep the Indians. In an email to KLCC, organizer Sony Provencal says she'll submit a petition ahead of the local school board's meeting on Wednesday, saying the community identifies as Indians and supporters admire the Cow Creek Band. But there have also been recent calls to end the Indians, with critics arguing neither the deal nor the mascot represents all Native people. RHS alum Amanda Mendoza, who identifies as Muscogee Creek, Choctaw, and Cherokee, says non-Indians claiming the mascot honors Native people doesn't sit well with her and others. A feedback form for Roseburg Public Schools has seen hundreds of responses.
For National Native News, I'm Brian Bull.
The Indian Health Service has surpassed its goal of administering 400,000 COVID-19 vaccines by the end of the month. IHS Chief Medical Officer Rear Admiral Michael Tote credits reaching the goal with partnerships with IHS, tribal, and urban clinics across the country. The IHS is currently distributing Pfizer and Moderna. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Friday, February 26th, 2021. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our remote production team for tonight's newscast is Ethan Sandweiss, Ray Bodwell, Antonia Gonzalez, and Mary Sherman. The producer is Ray Bodwell, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Mary Sherman, Antonia Gonzalez, and Eric Tagetoff. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Nat Moon.
You are listening to KBOO Portland.